This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity and Business Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Nevin Raj. Nevin's the co-founder and the COO of Grotta. Grotta is this brilliant firm that tracks investment and private investment opportunities and in the world of that world. Nevin, could you take a moment, tell us about Grotta and tell us the big things that you're looking at as we sort of end 2021 and head into 2022. What are the big things on your mind and how does Grotta go about doing what it does?
Yeah, thanks for that intro, Scott. There is a lot of interesting stuff happening right now in the middle market, which you know traditionally has been a space that hasn't gotten a lot of attention in the media. Every time you're out there reading articles or listening to the news, you're hearing about public companies and Amazon and Google or startups that are really in the minds and the spotlight of the media. But what we see is a lot of activity in the middle market. And these are with bootstrapped, founder-run businesses that attract a lot of attention from private equity, but now have been attracting attention from other investors across the life cycle, hedge funds getting more involved, family offices, asset managers, even earlier stage venture capital firms. So we, you know, our team here at Grotta, we talk to probably about 2,000 different business development professionals in private markets a year. And even in the Grotta platform, there are around 1,500 searches run a day. So we see a lot of volume and data, whether that's anecdotal or hard data on what's happening in the market. So excited to share a little bit more about what we're seeing and how that's really impacting or how we think that's going to impact private markets in the next year.
Thank you so much. And there's a comment I saw this morning by a research firm. The person who made the comment was a woman named Lenore Hawkins, an investment professional or analyst. And she had said, one of the things we're facing in the market is the market keeps on going up in part because there's just not enough alternatives, enough places to put money, given the amount of money that's out there. How do you look at that? Is that your sense of that, or are there lots of different opportunities bubbling up, but you have to have the systematic way that you do to find those opportunities and really understand them? What's your sense of this supply-demand of market opportunities?
Yeah, that's the biggest misconception out there in the market. There's too much money and not enough opportunities. It's because, let's just take the world of public companies. There are about 15,000 publicly traded companies. Now let's look at startups, where a lot of capital has been going. There are 200,000 startups. But when you look at the number of U.S. businesses, and the census defines this as employer businesses, two or more employees, there are 10 million of them out there. And there are certainly a lot less than 10 million fund managers. There are maybe 20,000 fund managers. There are 4,000 private equity firms. Still a lot, but there are a lot of businesses out there that could get access to capital that haven't been visible to investors. And that's part of what we do at Grotta, is our technology is out there crawling the web, indexing this information, making it more visible and accessible to an investor or a deal maker, whether that's an investment banker or a corporate M&A team, to find these companies. And so I think that's a common misconception.
Let me just ask you about that, because the 15,000 public companies, that's the worldwide number. Give me what the 200,000 is. The 10 million, there's 10 million small businesses, small to much bigger businesses that just aren't on everybody's radar screen, but they're on yours. Give me that breakdown of 15,000, 200,000, 10 million, because that's fascinating. Give me that again, if you don't mind.
Yeah, it's an order of magnitude difference. So you have about 15,000 globally traded public companies. Filtered down to the U.S., I believe it's closer to 5,000. For startups.
That was my understanding, so I just wanted to synergize those numbers. That's tremendously helpful. Thank you. Keep on going.
Venture-backed startups, it's closer to 200,000. And those have a high inflow and outflow. A lot of those companies don't make it past the startup stage, and then a lot more are funded every year. So when you look at the steady state, it's about 200,000. And then you flip to middle market businesses, and I'm not talking about sole proprietorships. There are about 30 million registered businesses in the U.S. But when you're looking at meaningful small businesses to middle market businesses, that number is 10 million.
Fantastic. 200,000 of VC or venture capital or private equity funding of some sort, 15,000 publicly traded companies worldwide, 5,000 in the U.S., 10 million businesses that aren't so small that they shouldn't be on somebody's radar, at least 10,000 potentially meaningful smaller to mid-sized businesses. And talk about what are the industries your investor clientele, because you're really a service for funds, for family offices, for others, and incredible what you've built. What are the interests people are most interested in? What are the issues in industries that they're looking at the most?
Yeah, and Scott, actually as a precursor to that, I want to start by just sharing a little bit more about the strategy that's driving this, and then we could talk about the industries. So right now, what's really popular in this fragmented realm of 10 million businesses is the buy and build strategy, also called roll-up strategy, where a firm invests in one business of scale, and that's their platform, and then they go out and buy other companies that are going to add synergies or going to help them gain market share, therefore creating a larger platform and essentially consolidating an industry. So there are three real dimensions or vectors to consolidation. The first one, and this is the most standard playbook that's run, is selling to new geographies. This happens in business services, healthcare, retail. You buy a business and then you go and acquire other businesses in neighboring cities, states, regions, and then you create a regional-based company. The second one
Let me stop you for 1 second, and we're going to come right back to this. So the first playbook, Private Equity 101, is we buy a platform at whatever multiple we have to pay. Then we add on a number of bolt-on acquisitions or add-ons at hopefully a lower multiple. And if nothing else, we get a little bit more scale, and we've increased our multiple because we've increased the overall size of the business. And all is good. The second thing that you mentioned, and, you know, one of my businesses has a private equity partner, and for years, all they talked about was geo-cloning into this concept of what you just said. So resonate with me, because me and one of my partners, we just heard the word geo-clone so much, we wanted to shoot ourselves at some point. But this is part of the standard private equity playbook. And it's so interesting to hear you say it, because I guess it makes sense to me, but they were so hardcore on it. We heard it so much. I was like, if we hear one more time about geocloning, I might shoot myself. But keep on going with the other things that you talk about.
That's exactly. So there's geocloning is a good way of phrasing it. I actually hadn't used that term before, but that's exactly it. The experience that you as a consumer or user gets when you are in one city and you travel to the next one and you have the sweet green, the Whole Foods, the Equinox, whatever you go to, it's the same experience. That's the concept of geocloning that's happening across industries. The next one is selling more to your existing customers. And we see this a lot with professional services and consumer products. Let's say you're a shoe company. You can only sell so many men's shoes. Then you have to start selling socks and pants, and you create a brand around a series of products or professional services. The third vector for buy and build is selling the same product, but to new customers, new industries. So you've taken almost like a one-trick pony, and you found different opportunities. And that tends to be actually one of the hardest strategies to execute well. Geocloning tends to be most common. It's the easiest one to do. But those are the three dimensions that we're seeing buy and build happen.
So you talk about three things: geocloning, growth of existing customers in one of the professional services firm. Watch closely. We talk about the share of the wallet. What is the share of the wallet we're getting from existing customers? How do we grow that share of wallet? And third is either new customers in your own industry, which is not necessarily that difficult, but when people try and pivot their technology offering, their business, whatever it is, to a new vertical, that could be very hard, particularly if it's not very closely adjacent. And finding markets that are as profitable and big as the first one. Got it. So that's the three ways that we look at. Just incredibly helpful, Nevin. Now talk further about the intersection of what you do with the industries you're looking at and the clients you have, or when you're ready.
Overlaying what we do at Grana and how our technology works is we provide better visibility into this middle market to execute these three types of strategies for buy and build. So without a technology like Grana, you're really not able to get this level of detail into the middle market. And I'll share several examples of what we have seen and what's going to be popular in 2022 to actually bring this to life. But this intelligence was in the dark. You could maybe get a list of all coffee shops in a city, in the country. But then if you want to know which coffee shops also sell juice, organic juice, and you have a strategy around the new healthy age of coffee to compete with Starbucks, that's where the data just doesn't exist. And so what a lot of people have done is they will manually research company, manually look at the website, read the Yelp page, go to the LinkedIn to try to figure out, what does the company do? Does it really fit my thesis of a roll-up? Then maybe check its ownership or funding history to see, well, can we actually acquire this business? So there's been a lot of manual work and just a lack of visibility into these highly fragmented spaces. And there's been a lot of technology that's being created, Grotta being one example, to help really investors and deal makers find these opportunities faster. Because as you mentioned before, there's just a lot of capital out there. There's 3.3 trillion of dry powder.
Crazy amount of money chasing this. Let me ask you a question now. Like the old Bloomberg terminal, at one point people were concerned, I've got a Bloomberg terminal, but my competitor's going to have one too. So where's my competitive advantage? So how do you work with the different private equity funds that you work with? Is it a subscription model? Is it a deeper relationship? What does that look like? I mean, you're sort of helping them to either accelerate or outsource some of the research functions, which are huge areas. I mean, huge areas of effort. Always, I mean, the amount of people just chasing and trying to find the right new deal to add onto the platform are huge at these funds. How do you fit into that so where they don't feel like, well, you're giving the same information to our competitor who's also building a platform or doing a buy and build of the platform? How do you sort of work through some of those issues?
Yeah, now that's a perpetual challenge because all investors talk about alpha and what do I have that no one else has? What's proprietary? It kind of comes down to, and it's similar to, just take Excel. Everyone has Excel. Now, the way you model, the way you write formulas, the way you organize information in Excel is going to change the value you get from that product. And our view on Grotta is pretty similar. You're looking for coffee shops. You're looking for coffee shops related to healthy, fresh pressed juices. That's your unique angle on the market. You have the tools now with Grotta to be able to find and originate these companies, but you have to come to the table with that idea of the thesis and the angle you have on companies. And I can talk about a few examples and how this manifests itself on some of the popular spaces that we're seeing.
Well, that would be great. And I know you're to be clear about it, you're tremendously well respected by the funds that work with you and the family offices that work with you and love what you do. But it's just trying to understand. So if they're working on proprietary searches, proprietary efforts, then they work with you. But you also have a regular ongoing model. How does that work? How do you work with your customers?
Yeah, our users subscribe to the platform. So it's annual subscriptions, and they are running their own searches in Grotta. So they may be working with a buy-side advisor. They may be working with a management consulting firm. And the buy-side advisor or the consulting firm may also be using Grotta. The beauty of it is that they're each able to get a different perspective on the market because they may be querying and searching in the platform in slightly different ways. It's kind of like the expert network model. Everyone uses GLG and Alpha Sites, but they may be asking the experts different questions.
100% and brilliant. And is the strength there at Grotta, is it a mix of the technology and the people that you have doing the research, or how does that work, or building the model? How is it driven that it produces the right information for your – you talked about this a little bit earlier. Would you double down just for a moment on, you know, 2,000 conversations, 1,500 searches a day, and how you sort of develop the database so in what you do that it's so useful to your customers?
Yeah, the technology we've created is kind of like Google, but for finding middle market companies, where it's all based on machine learning and models. And we have people out there training, annotating, telling the system how to think. Essentially, we're teaching machines how to think. And everything else is automated. So a user comes into Grotta and just keys in a search, and they get results in a Google-like experience where they're not seeing any of machine learning happening. It's all serving up relevant results. And I'll give you a good example. If you're looking for, let's take software companies that sell products to investors. Now, two keywords you're going to type in are software and investor. But if you're an investor who invests in software companies, you're going to have the same keywords on your website. So how do you differentiate between those two, which are very different types of companies? Well, that takes an intelligent search, machine learning, to really understand the relationship between those terms, those words on a site, to tell a user, hey, you know what, these, they may have the same keywords, but ultimately these are actually very different companies, and here are the results that are actually relevant to what you're looking for.
Got it. And if you could accelerate somebody's business development efforts and help them get from point A to point B quicker, there's just tremendous value in that. And there's just crazy value in that, because that's what everybody needs to do, is add on bolt-ons, add on expansion, add on growth, so that when they get ready to exit 3 to 5 years later, they're a different size company, a better company than they were when they invest in the platform to begin with. So absolutely fascinating. And I see the value proposition. Talk to us for a moment, Nevin, about the industries that you have that there's the most interest in, that people are, you know, talking to you about the most, that they're trying to do searches the most, that they're trying to look at the most. What's the sense of where the most interest is today?
So we can break this down into a few categories. I want to actually start off with healthcare, because this is a generally an industry that's had a lot of innovation over the last few years. Where we're seeing the most interest from private equity is actually in out-of-pocket healthcare as a sub-theme within healthcare. And I'll give you one example of a space that's particularly popular. So take medical spas. Are you actually familiar with what a med spa is?
Of course, of course. Yeah. No, 100%. I mean, yes, 100%.
So they've evolved over the last few years. There are about 44,000 of them out there in the U.S. They provide cosmetic, typically non-invasive procedures, cosmetic that people are paying for out of their pocket. The space is really interesting for a few reasons. I mean, there's been about 66 M&A events that we tracked in 2021 alone, and this is 10 times higher than the five-year average. So there's been a huge influx of capital into the space. There are firms out there. Ridgemont has 4 companies in the space. Potomac has 3 companies. There's another holding company called Pinnacle Dermatology. So corporates are playing in the space. Sponsors are here. But what's interesting about these companies is that they don't deal with reimbursement loss, meaning if you're paying out of pocket, they don't have to go back to insurance, and they don't have to go back to Medicare and ask for a reimbursement and get a lower rate than what they expected. So they have more predictable revenue because they charge for their services, and they know they're going to make that revenue for their services. So that's one thing that's really interesting about the space. What's also really interesting is in these buy and build strategies, firms are layering on new sources of revenue. And we talked about one of those vectors for buy and build being sell more to the same customers. So once you have a captive customer base, you have to get Botox every certain number of years in the same intervals. So you have a captive audience. What they're doing is they're starting to sell them products. Cosmetic products are being sold through these med spas. That's another means of generating revenue. They're also pushing the envelope on technology. The faster a procedure is, the better the results are, whether they can get you there with less pain and less time in a procedure. You can start doing more procedures. You lower the barrier for entry. So there's a lot of tech innovation. And there's also been a segmentation here between those that focus on hair versus skin being the two big categories, and really trying to cross-sell. So if you are really a hair removal company, can you then get into skin, or can skin get into hair? And these factors are pretty hard to see from the outside in when you don't have good visibility into the space. Because if you looked at this as a category, you just say, oh, there are 45,000 med spas out there. But when you start looking at ones that focus on hair versus skin, or that have some of the latest technologies that they're using, you get more striation in the market, and actually the roll-up opportunities become more obvious, and you start seeing things that your peers aren't seeing. So you mentioned, how do you get that edge? How do you get that alpha? It's starting to think through these types of strategies where firm one may just be looking at med spas, but firm two that takes this nuanced third level of depth approach is going to get opportunities, and it's going to see synergies that others can't see, therefore can pay more for a company, underwrite bigger deals, and then higher returns.
Got it. Just far, far more efficient, far better clarity as to what people are looking for and what they find in the searches, and just much acceleration in business development.
Yep. So that's one, that's out-of-pocket healthcare. A second space where this is getting to become really popular is home services. And it really accelerated through COVID because more people are working from home. Even the largest, most established companies are implementing flexible work models, hybrid work. So now it's no longer 5 days in the office. It's up to 5 days in the office. So people are starting to really renovate, soup up their home, make it a place where they can spend more time, but therefore they need more services in the home. And so you've seen for example, a huge growth in HVAC, and there have been trends around HVAC companies that can support antiviral filters in their systems, and HVAC contractors that provide more ongoing maintenance, because homes and small businesses need more frequent check-ins because people are more concerned about the air quality. And because they're spending more time at home, they want to make sure their AC works in the summer and their heating works well in the winter. Whereas before, if it was just the weekend, maybe they'd take slightly suboptimal conditions. That's been one space that's gotten really big. In relation to this too, there have been the B2B version of the kind of the in-home or in-business services that have gotten really popular. There's been one space that we've seen huge activity in. It's actually in fire protection and fire services and equipment. This is actually along with another trend of compliance and the government having more regulations for businesses as they start to really crack down on ESG and environmental sustainability. So something's happening in fire protection, and this is a little smaller than med spas. There are closer to 5,000 companies in this space, but the strategy that's being pursued here is more of that geocloning strategy that you mentioned, where firms are looking at rolling up other companies in regions and cities and certain states. We tracked about 60 M&A events in 2021, and that's about 200% higher than our five-year average. There are a series of parent companies out there, like J2 has done a bunch of deals here. Atlas has done, that owns 10 companies. Highview Capital owns 6 companies. And there are many others that actually have even bigger platforms. What we're seeing is the rise of smaller regional platforms being rolled up into bigger platforms. So before, we had talked about, you go buy a platform, then you go buy a bunch of independent businesses and you create one. But now we're seeing platforms within platforms. And that's how it's almost like an exponential way of scaling and consolidating the market, which has been really interesting here.
Talk about for a moment, it's so funny you mentioned the HVAC world, because one of the things that's happened over the last year, I mean, obviously, so much of the money's in technology and everything else. It's just this, like, if I look at the world that I'm in, say on the board of one company, it's not a technology company, I'm investing in several sort of technology companies. And really, there's days where you wake up and you say, you just want to invest in technology companies. That seems to be the future of everything. There's just, different multiples, different opportunities, but more binary. But talk about, you mentioned the HVAC. And one of the things fascinating to me, I've got a friend in the landscape business, a friend in the HVAC business. There's still a tremendous amount of roll-ups in these traditional business worlds, the HVAC world, the landscape world. I mean, it's private equity is chasing everything in some ways, aren't they?
Well, here's what's interesting about HVAC and some of those businesses that are not traditional technology businesses. They actually have really healthy recurring revenue. If you're a maintenance-driven and inspection-driven HVAC business, even fire protection, you have pretty steady contracts. You're going back to the same customers. And even if you don't have recurring contracts, there's pretty good predictability with when you're going to recognize revenue. And so that's allowing investors to see, and we even see it in car washes. There's the whole subscription car wash now. I told you, Botox happens every few years. So investors are really modeling these non-tech businesses as more like tech businesses because of the revenue streams that they see from certain subsets of companies that have gone away from the project-based, installation-based, lumpy businesses. And that's like a really interesting point as we talk about how you source good deals. It's being able to see these companies
before you see the other ones, because they're easier to model, they have healthier revenue, and ultimately they're going to be more valuable.
It's so fascinating you mentioned. I know we've got to wrap up in a moment, but it's fascinating you mentioned this because we had somebody on our business podcast not very long ago who's got a car wash business that they're rolling up, and like the rest of the world, all they're trying to do is be on the subscription model. So there's predictable revenues, predictable modeling, and hopefully stickier customers. But it's a fascinating evolution in business. You know, how much when a trend takes hold, everybody wants to be in the predictable business model. So they're moving as much as possible towards a subscription model. And then also the thing is these very traditional businesses that are trying to be continue to be traditional businesses, but also be tech enabled or at least leaders in tech applications in the traditional business. Just absolutely fascinating to watch. Nevin, where can people learn more about Grotta and so forth? What a magnificent thing and company that you founded. Thing's the wrong word, but what a magnificent effort you folks have founded it and put to work. Just amazing. How can people learn more about Grotta?
Thanks, Scott. Yeah, it's easy. Anyone can go on our website at grotta.com and request a demo and more information. We have an amazing team that's always happy to share more about the product and even share more about what we're hearing in the market as folks are thinking about implementing more of these proprietary sourcing strategies or implementing a tech stack. Our goal is to bring more visibility into the middle market and see capital deployed more efficiently across to these small and medium-sized businesses. So we're always happy to have a conversation.
Thank you so much. Always just a pleasure to visit with you, Nevin. Just magnificent what you folks are doing. Thank you very much.
Likewise. Thanks, Scott.